This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. This week we are covering Christmas with the Cranks. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you may want to pass on this one and we'll see you next time.
Are you ready for
One Dry Kiss?
Yes! Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-com movies, except for this month in November. We're doing rom-com movies with a little Christmas magic because we can. And you can never have enough Christmas. So if you are not a Christmas... and wait, what is that? What's that? It's like Corinne's the Tinkerbell of Christmas. That's how she talks. She talks in Christmas magic, and it sounds like ching-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. Oh, but I should say, I am here with my bestie, whose lovely, sparkly, silver hair reminds me of tinsel and never fails to put me in the Christmas mood, Corinne Edding.
I am here with my lovely co-host, whose beautiful smile is like the lights on a Christmas tree for me, Miss Tamara Cosio.
No, I just ate a fruit salad, and I got lots of colorful things in my teeth, but come on.
Oh, but it's so beautiful and shiny.
It's beautiful and it's colorful. Oh, thank you. I know you're not. I don't have the whitening toothpaste anymore. Oh. Anyways, so you might be wondering if you are a new listener, what? It's November and they're doing Christmas? Yes, yes, we are. We do Christmas 3 times a year in July or August or whenever we feel like in the middle of the year when we need some Christmas spirit, and November and December.
We used to be an exclusively only Hallmark movie podcast. And because of that, Christmas starts in mid-October in Hallmark land. So I do not think we need to do Christmas in mid-October. However, due to the fact that November and December are the big Christmas months for Hallmark, as well as Christmas in July is the other big Christmas month for Hallmark. We're showing our roots here. We're showing our Hallmark roots.
You can't start Christmas in October because then you would miss October and Halloween and all the goodness that comes with that.
And while I'm not a big Halloween fan, I totally agree that let's leave all the fun Halloween stuff for people. And then November 1, jinga, 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 jinga. Yeah, it's Christmas.
I love Halloween. Went to Knott's Scary Farm this year on Halloween night. It was pretty fucking epic. I was telling Corinne about it before we started, and she said that sounds like her worst freaking nightmare.
Yeah,
Can you tell him what you said about Knott's Scary Farm, or do you not want to say that?
No, I totally will. I thought that Knott's Scary Farm was N-O-T Scary Farm. So I was like, she was talking about going into haunted houses, and I was like, oh, so you go into a room, and then there's like Snoopy being like, I'll give you a hug. And then you go into another room and there's Charlie Brown being like, here's some candy. And I was like, I could deal with that. And Tamara just ripped the happy Hallmark away from my eyes. And
yeah. She's like, but you said it was not Scary Farm. And I was like, no, K-N-O-T-T, not N-O-T. And she's like, oh. Because I was like, there was bodies decapitated and people jumping out and scaring you and all kinds of good stuff like that. Nope. It was definitely scary.
Nope. Corinne nopes on out. I love that you enjoyed it, though.
Yes, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. How much would one have to pay you to actually go to Knott's Scary Farm and spend, let's say, 4 hours? What's your dollar amount?
$5 million.
That's your lowest offer? Not even one? You wouldn't go for $1 million?
No, because $1 million won't even really get me a house. So, yeah.
It's got to be house buying money. Yeah, so you'd have to get like a couple mil.
Yeah, I mean, I would minimum $3 million because you also want some money to live off of.
Yeah. So I saw a triplex today on Facebook. They're like, here's a house. It's a triplex. You look at triplexes sometimes. And I'm like, yeah, you can have rentals. That's awesome. How much is it? $1.5 million? Fuck you. No. Oh. Anyways, I don't want to go off on my house tangents because it's just depressing right now.
I would spend the entire evening and go through all of the haunted houses for $5 million. Absolutely. Like, open to close, be there, and just be like, okay, yeah, this is horrible.
I'm going to need 7 to 8 days to recover. Don't talk to me. Don't call me. I'm going to be crouching in a corner in my apartment, not talking to anybody.
Look, you just have to promise to spoon me afterwards, not leave me alone. And also, I'm going to need some therapy. It'll be fine, though.
Yes. Yes. But it'll be like a good learning experience or something.
Uh-huh. Sure. Sure. Let's just tell
ourselves
that. Whatever
doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that. I mean, I do think that having struggles definitely helped to develop my character in certain ways, but not all of it was positive, and I'm okay with not struggling. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think we had plenty of struggle early on that we don't need anymore. I think we, yes, like, filled up on struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all
Absolutely.
Full up on struggle now. Mm. My tank is full, ready to go on the fun stuff with my struggle reservoir and just move on from here and have a good time. Speaking of good times, Corinne, do you know who wrote Christmas with the Cranks?
I do not know who wrote Christmas with the Cranks.
It was actually based on a book written by John Grisham.
Oh, yes. I do know that. Yeah. I saw that in the titles.
Grisham.
Yes.
Famous for making legal and law-based books and movies, decided to do Christmas with the Cranks, which is heavily a Christmas movie. And when I first saw the title, I thought it had a very different plot line because back in our old neighborhood, crank is what they called meth. So when they said Christmas with the Cranks, I was a little confused, but interested enough to watch it. And it has nothing to do with meth.
That's good to know.
Mm-hmm. So Corinne, speaking of meth, do you have a synopsis?
Why? I just snorted a few lines a few minutes ago. So yes, I do. I'm wide awake. I'm ready. And don't mind me if I'm talking really fast, okay?
Sure.
It's the Sunday after Thanksgiving, and Nora Crank, played by Jamie Lee Curtis, and Luther Crank, played by Tim Allen, they're married, have just sent their daughter off to the Peace Corps. Nora and their daughter Blair is played by, this is important because, speaking of Hallmark, she is a strong Hallmark alum.
Is she now? I didn't recognize her.
Julie Gonzalo. Yes.
Oh.
We have not watched any movies with her, but I have seen several Hallmark movies with her, actually, just very recently. So, yes, Julie Gonzalo.
I could see that. She looks like she would fit well in the Hallmark universe. Yes.
Yes. She's a brunette now, which I think is more like her natural hair color. She's a blonde in the movie, but yes. So, anyways, they have just sent their daughter Blair off to the Peace Corps. Nora is bereft, and Luther is tired of the shitty weather. After getting doused with a deluge of rainy water, he sees an ad for a cruise. The next day at work, he does calculations and he realizes they can save thousands by ignoring Christmas and going on a cruise instead. This would be a great idea if only Luther wasn't a giant asshole, managing to alienate everyone in the neighborhood. And if their neighborhood wasn't the most hell-bent on Christmas without an HOA neighborhood ever, join us as we follow the hijinks of Luther and Nora trying to avoid all things Christmas. And then the ultimate fallout of these decisions after receiving a surprise phone call. Will the Cranks pretend to convert to a non-Christmas celebrating religion? Will Luther be hit with the Christmas spirit and give openly to charities and give his receptionist a nice cash gift for Christmas? Keep those listening ears listening to find out.
Yeah, I wonder how much different this movie would be if they just told everybody they were just converting to Jehovah's Witnesses.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Then everybody would have just left him alone and they could have gone on their happy little merry way.
I also have other suggestions as well, but you know,
such as please share.
They will be revealed in due time.
Okay.
Yes.
Why are you like steepling your fingers together a little evilly?
It's fine. No worries here.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little worried.
So, Miss Tamara, are you ready to launch us into Christmas with the non-drug Cranks?
Yes, I've also done a couple of lines. Forgive my fast talking, and let's get right into it. Let's get right into it right now. We open with Mr. and Mrs. Crank sitting in a bed, sadly contemplating the big day they have in front of them. Today's the day they drop Blair off at the airport. It's a few days after Thanksgiving and presumably the worst travel day of the year, according to Luther, played by Tim Allen, as Corinne said. Blair's going to be volunteering for the Peace Corps and is heading into the jungles of Peru. She assures her parents that the time will fly by and she'll be back next year in time for Christmas, and heartfelt goodbyes are said all around.
Aww. You mentioned that he says, oh, this is the most heavily traveled day. He says that it's the most heavily traveled day to the airport. Mm-hmm. But what he says is, why'd you have to choose to leave on this day? Like,
because he's a caring and doting father, Corinne. Uh-huh. That's what caring and doting fathers say.
Right. Yeah.
And it was the Sunday after Thanksgiving. I'm like, yeah. You don't know that's the busiest travel day, but whatever. Luther.
That should be the running theme throughout this movie. Whatever, Luther.
I like it. Yes.
Yes.
What was our running theme last time? Or one of our running themes?
Oh, that Louise during Teen Witch. Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Now it's whatever, Luther.
Yeah.
I like it. On the way home, they stop at Chip's grocery store for white chocolate and pistachios for a dessert Nora's making for the ladies' luncheon. It's pouring rain, and Luther realizes he left his umbrella at home. He looks at his wife expectantly, but she insists that she really, really needs that stuff for the ladies' luncheon. Luther doesn't move, so Nora offers to go get it herself. But Luther will have none of it. He's the man. He'll go. The second he gets out of the car, he gets splashed by another car. And just outside the store entrance, a man in a Santa suit is selling umbrellas and yells, I really think you need an umbrella! But Luther declines.
And they're super cute umbrellas. They have a big Santa face on.
I know! I'm like, I will take one for later, just in case. Like, it might not even be raining. I still might buy one of those damn umbrellas because they were super cute.
Seriously.
And festive.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But Luther declines. He returns to the car soaking wet and hands Nora the bag. She opens it and notices there's no white chocolate. Luther admits he couldn't find it. They must be out. Nora asks incredulously, well, did you ask Max the butcher? He practically sneers, no, it didn't cross my mind to ask the butcher about white chocolate. Her expression sends him back into the store where Santa tries again to unsuccessfully sell him an umbrella. But Luther holds up a finger because he doesn't want another word about umbrellas. A few minutes later, he emerges again, gets bumped into the store's awning, and the Santa insists, I really think you need an umbrella, just as the canopy buckles and a huge wall of water falls right on top of Luther's
Yay!
Head. He gurgles.
Corinne.
So evil. So evil.
I'm evil? Or just like, he's being such a shit already, right off the bat.
He's being... Okay. Airport, yes, agree. He was being a shit. Like, your daughter's leaving. At least have a little, like, heartfelt moment instead of being like, God, it's so busy in here. I don't want to be here on Sunday after Thanksgiving. But he literally, like, had to walk into that store soaking wet. Like, I would be a little tiffed, too. I don't know if I'd be an asshole, like, right out the door. But by the time I got to Luther's drenchedness at this moment in time, I might be a little peeved. I'm going to give him a pass.
If he had just asked in the store... somebody about white chocolate instead of just like cruising down the aisles and just being like, oh no, it's not next to the Snickers, so I'm just gonna call it good. When she was so specific about the type of chocolate.
I don't think I'd ask a butcher about chocolate either, though. I don't think I'd be like,
no, but I don't think he asked anyone. I think he just cruised down the aisles.
You're probably right.
If he had like literally just asked somebody who worked there, they would have pointed him to the white chocolate.
Men's don't ever ask questions, Corinne. It's not in their nature. They don't ask for directions and they don't ask questions.
He made his own soggy bed. I am reveling in the downpour.
Okay. Well, he did get a downpour. And inside of it, he gurgled, I don't need an umbrella because I couldn't possibly get any wetter.
Which is true.
Yeah. He is soaked, but a beacon of light catches his attention. It's of a happy couple frolicking on a white sandy beach with the cruise ship behind them, and Luther gets an idea.
Ooh. The next day he goes into his office, closes the door, and crunches some numbers. He comes up with a figure, $6,132. That is $9,939 in today's money.
Doing the Lord's work, Corinne. Thank you. Lord's work.
Thank you. and he gets a little gleam in his eye. That night, as he and Nora are eating dinner, lamenting on how nothing's going to be the same, she is wearing a festive turtleneck, and then she's got her festive Christmas sweater on top of her festive turtleneck. She's got the Christmas mugs out.
God's honest truth, Corinne. I thought this would be you, like, well into your, I think in 50s. This is how I imagine Corinne at in her 50s.
Oh, hell
like,
nah.
Christmas the fucked out in a festive Christmas vest.
Nope.
And nope.
No, no, okay. No, 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 no.
I know I'm wrong. I know I'm wrong. You definitely did not go down that direction. But this is how I pictured you when you were like such a Christmas lover back in the day in her younger years.
Huh. I am a little, I feel like I'm getting some, what's the word? It's like resentments. I feel like some resentments are building up right now that you would envision me wearing that tacky ass shit. Excuse me?
Well, Jamie Lee Curtis is also pretty hot. So there's that. I also envisioned you as pretty hot in your, you know, well into your 40s and 50s. That too.
Does not matter if you're wearing a big clunky Christmas sweater over it all and a fucking turtleneck. Hell no.
She filled out that vest pretty
well.
How
many times have I worn a turtleneck?
Oh, true.
Probably the last time I wore a turtleneck was when I was 7. I don't know. But I never purchased one for myself.
Oh, Christmas is right around the corner. I think we might need to change that.
If you want something that I will never wear, you are welcome to buy me a turtleneck.
Would you do it for me if I wanted just to put it on like when I visited, when it was cold, like in December?
No, but if you wanted me to wear it for like special bestie photo, I would have that as one of the outfits, absolutely, because I love you.
Oh, the planning is afoot now.
Yes. You would have to be wearing a turtleneck too, though. It wouldn't
of
just...
course.
Okay, yes.
I have no qualms wearing turtlenecks. I do not like my neck that much. I will happily don a turtleneck. Oh my God, I can picture it now. Olin Mills, black turtlenecks, me with my hands both on one of your shoulders, and then we have the double exposure with us like looking off into the sunset together.
Oh my gosh, that would be amazing. Oh,
it's going to be the Christmas gift that keeps on giving.
Oh, and then we'll have one where we're wearing like festive Christmas jammies or something. I don't know. You know, Corinne's choice. So she has already set things out for Christmas. She is ready to go, but she's sad because her daughter is not going to be with them for the first time in 23 or 24 years, something like that. Because you can't just go to the Peace Corps. You have to have like degrees and shit to go into the Peace Corps. Anyways.
I didn't know that. Do you?
Yeah.
You can't just volunteer and be like, ugh. Wow.
Yeah, no. So you can't just like be straight out of high school and be like, I'm going into the Peace Corps. You need degrees and special skill sets and stuff like that. Yes.
Mm.
So they haven't had a Christmas alone in 23 years. Nora sadly says, I wish I could just forget about it. This causes Luther to grin at her mischievously. She thinks he's trying to get a frisky ba-chicka-ba-ba. And giggles, telling him, it's not 8:15 on Wednesday. Finish your pasta. But Luther jumps up and says, I'm done with my pasta, but I'm not done with you. Nora, tickled, begins unbuttoning her super sexy Christmas vest. But, you know, there's still the additional layer of the Christmas turtleneck. I mean, there's nothing is going on, basically. She's fluffing her hair and downing her and Luther's glasses of wine, giggling. It's not even Saturday night. He returns in a Hawaiian shirt, sunglasses, with a boombox over his shoulder, playing. Oh, and this Tam knows what this is because I don't know. Because Tam is a reggae expert.
No, no. Prime Video with captions on is a reggae expert.
Oh, Toots. And do you know how to pronounce it?
Toots and the Maytals.
Toots and the Maytals. Not to be confused with Toots and the My Dolls. That's for when you're feeling premenstrual. It's reggae music, and Nora's eyes light up. She thrusts her chest at him expectantly, her bosoms heaving. Are they role-playing? No, they're not. And sadly, he does not want to have sex with his wife on the dining room table.
Shucks.
I know. When you get an opportunity like that, like, go for the gold. But no, he didn't. He asks Nora, what are you doing? Button up that sexy Christmas vest and sit down. I wish he said button up that sexy Christmas vest, because at least that would have been playful. Instead, she just looked kind of shamed and sits down. Confused. Yeah. She rightfully is. So. And he presents her with a ledger from last Christmas. The $6,000 figure from earlier was what they spent on all of Christmas last year, including $60 on ornament repair alone. The horror!
The fuck you doing? $60 for ornament repair. I put that in there specifically because what in the hell would you need $60 to repair? Vintage?
I don't know, but they spend a fuck ton of money apparently on Christmas, because I can tell you that in this year of 2023, I do not spend $6,132 on Christmas, much less close to $10,000 on Christmas.
Yes, and the extent of my ornament repair is a $399 I will put towards super glue, and if that doesn't work, oh well, we got to get a new ornament.
I know, the extent of my ornament repair is, where's the dustpan?
Yes, seriously.
So Luther proposes that this holiday season they go on a 10-day Caribbean cruise. He plants the glossy brochure in front of her and lists all the exciting things that they could do. She asks, what's the catch? And he tells her, well, we'll skip Christmas. Nora's demeanor changes. What are you talking about, skip Christmas? And then he says, but look at this. This little bad boy Christmas vacay Caribbean cruise will only cost $3,000. We are fucking saving money, Nora. You can laugh your way to the bank. And she blurts out excitedly, we'll save money? Luther nods excitedly, and she's on board, literally and figuratively speaking. She starts perusing the brochure, but adds, we'll still be able to make our charitable donations, right? Luther shakes his motherfucking head. I'm afraid it's a total boycott. Right, because you're saving $3,000. You can't throw any money towards charity? No. That would just be too much. That would ruin the whole Christmas. No, honey. Either we completely ignore Christmas and we go on the cruise, or we don't go on the cruise and we embrace Christmas. I'm sorry, Luther.
There should be a happy medium. There should be a happy medium. I would be going on that cruise and I'd still want presents and maybe a little mini tree to put in our cabin.
Seriously, maybe not like throw the entire neighborhood an expensive party, but
yes,
but still do some stuff. Anywho, Nora steals her resolve and says, then no. She's like, if you can't even throw down some money for our regular charities, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Nora. Finally. Cut to them in bed, getting ready to turn in, and Luther says disappointedly, I can't believe you're going to let a measly $600, fucking $600, $600 stop us from going on this trip. To which Nora retorts, yeah, Nora, yeah.
That's what Nora retorts.
I say, hey, asshole, you're saving money and you can't even do a tax deductible donation. What's your damage, Heather? But Nora says, no, you are standing in the way of us going on this trip. Luther reluctantly agrees to match all their charitable donations that they made last year. And Nora pulls off her glasses and crawls on top of him. It's sexy time. I know what you're thinking, and what you're thinking is it really is sexy time. And Luther says, it's not even Saturday night, as the lights flick off in their bedroom.
Wow. Seems like two movies where we were talking about scheduled sexy times. That's really, really coincidental. Mm-hmm.
Both Christmas movies? Absolutely, yeah.
Both scheduling the sex in. Both. Putting it in their calendar, penciling in their ledgers. The next day, back in his office, Luther drafts a message outlining his plans to skip Christmas. He will not be attending the black tie affair or the office party or giving / accepting holiday gifts. He concludes with, "I'm not mad. I will not yell bah humbug at you. We are simply skipping Christmas." He makes several copies on the printer and hands them out to all his colleagues.
On fucking letterhead. On fucking company letterhead. Are you fucking kidding me? Letterhead is hella expensive. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to do a diatribe about how I'm not going to be doing Christmas on fucking company letterhead. Asshole.
Now, that is a man who spends $60 on ornament repair and $6,000 on Christmas for sure. Meanwhile, Nora's walking down the street in her neighborhood. She passes a local stationery store, and Abby, the store clerk, sees her from the window and waves enthusiastically.
Oh, God. Oh, God. What the hell is going on here?
Oh, God is right. Nora tentatively waves back and walks a little faster, causing him to leave the store and chase after her. Is it a horror movie? No. Because when he catches up, he explains that he's really concerned because she hasn't selected her holiday cards yet. She sheepishly tells him that they're not going to send cards this year. And he's confused because she always selects the loveliest cards. The nerve. How dare Nora not send out holiday cards? She makes an excuse and hurries off to her ladies' luncheon. She's in the middle of explaining to her two table mates how she and Luther have decided to skip Christmas, and the ladies are appalled that she's not celebrating the best holiday of the year and not having her annual Christmas Eve party. One of her friends asks selflessly, "What are we supposed to do without your Christmas Eve party?"
Very selflessly.
Just then, that pesky Abby emerges and informs them haughtily that she's not even getting Christmas cards this year. And I say, don't you have a store to rent, Abby?
Seriously.
Did you, like, leave it unmanned to come all the way over here to shame her for not buying cards from you?
Like, this is stalker status. Like, this, if this were a Lifetime movie, he would be knocking her over the head and, like, tying her up in the storage room and being like, you're going to select those Christmas cards and you're going to like it.
Or it's going to be like You, where he's, like, gazing at her half of a face behind a bookshelf as she, like, reads something.
Totally.
She's over there looking at she's looking at his invitations, and you just hear, read, as he's like staring at her intensely from across the shop, and she doesn't know it. This whole time, all those years, Abby's been obsessed with her, and Nora just never caught on. This is the day we find out, though. This is the day. I'm just kidding. It's not that type
of
movie.
But it practically is the day we find out, because you're going to,
Yeah. So Nora's friends give her the third degree while Abby, that little agent of chaos, sits at an adjoining table and fills all the other ladies' luncheon members about the atrocity, in quotation marks. I call it the atrocity because what the fuck?
Seriously.
Who cares? They ask when Nora's leaving for her trip, and she tells them high noon Christmas Day. One of her friends informs her, well, you can still have your Christmas Eve party then. But Nora's had quite enough. She tells her friend that they're not having a party because they don't want to. They're taking the year off, and that's it.
Woo. As Abby stares at her from the table.
That is the stare I picture him giving her in the stationery store all those years that she was just too involved in her holiday festivities to notice. Run, Nora, run. You in danger, girl.
Seriously. And I want to know, what's the big deal about skipping Christmas? Asking for a friend, me. I'm sorry. The world is apparently ending because of this?
Yeah. I would actually be like a little relieved. I'd be like, oh, great. I don't have to buy you a gift then. Cool.
Nobody's got to buy me a gift for Christmas. I'm fine with that. I just want my fucking Christmas tree and the twinkle lights and all the magic that gets accompanied with it. And I'm good. But like, if somebody's like, hey, this year I'm not going to celebrate Christmas, I'm not going to be like, come over to my house at 7 p.m. for an intervention, because there are ways that this is going to affect my life that I'm not happy about.
Yeah, you'd be sitting in your little Christmas paradise being like, fuck it, I feel bad for you, but oh well, it's your choice.
I know.
This isn't that type of movie, Corinne.
You don't get to sit in my like awesome living room with the lights off, listening to Christmas music, with the twinkle lights going on the tree. You're lost. It's fine.
However, Barbara's special stockings hanging on the fireplace mantle.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I also, my other comment, what kind of friends are these? They aren't supporting her on her fun trip. If they were really good friends, they throw an intervention for her regarding her shitty husband.
See, yeah, they're being shitty friends, but I might be a tad bit concerned, a smidge, if you told me you were skipping Christmas to go on a trip. I would support you, but I'd be like, what happened? Why aren't you celebrating Christmas? What's going on? There's got to be some underlying reason.
I'd be like, I want to go to Europe this year. Thanks. What's my...
I know, but you, like, right in the middle of Christmas, your favorite time of year?
It's when I have time off of work, which is why it's a great time to have a wedding as well, by the way.
Oh, no. We're not talking about Bruno or a wedding.
It all comes back around.
Fair point.
Back at home, Luther and Nora are approached by a couple of Boy Scouts who are going around the neighborhood selling Christmas trees like they do every year. The Scoutmaster informs them that the Scouts saved them a beautiful 10-foot Canadian blue spruce because Nora likes the big ones. And apparently, Nora really likes brown trees that look like they were cut down a month prior because that tree is shitty looking.
Oh my God, I didn't even realize that. I gotta go back and watch it.
It's not like completely brown, but it is... It's definitely not a fresh green looking tree.
See, I don't watch enough Hallmark movies. Like, you got the Hallmark down where you can, like, see the tree and know the perks and the quirks and the good things and the bad things about those trees because you've been taught well via Hallmark. Not me. That's why I missed it.
Hallmark is tricksy with their trees. They'll be like, oh, look at this beautiful tree. And you're like, that is a beautiful tree. And then they'll set it up inside. And I'm like, that is a fake fucking tree. It was real before, now it's fake inside. Nope.
So maybe Christmas with the Cranks is bizarro world where it looks shitty outside, but then once they put it in, it's glorious and beautiful.
I'm sure. The Scoutmaster says, you can have this for the low price of $90, and all the proceeds go towards the Scouts. Luther refuses the tree, and Nora implores, it's only $90. Man, they fucking... have money, honey, because this is in like 2004, I think, and trees were not that expensive back in 2004. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Luther refuses the tree, and Nora implores, it's only $90. Luther gives her a side eye and says, we've discussed this, which causes her to go back inside and slam the door. Now, mind you, there is a festive wreath on their door throughout a lot of this movie.
I also saw that.
Yes. Yes. Has a nice little Christmas flair to it.
Oh, boycotting Christmas, are we? What's that wreath doing on your door, Luther? I wonder if it, like, preceded the decision to skip Christmas, so therefore it was fair game. Like, that wreath was already out. We put it out, like, the day after Thanksgiving. Therefore, it can stay.
I guess. I'm surprised that fucking Luther didn't go through and, like, strip all signs of Christmas from their house that she had put out previous.
Yeah.
And been like, no more Christmas!
Same.
He's very hard-line about the whole thing.
He is.
Luther tells the kids that it's not about the money, except it is about the money, because Luther does not like spending it. They're skipping Christmas this year. The Scoutmaster is flabbergasted and performatively knocks over the tree they brought, gives Luther a look, and drags it away. Inside, Luther finds Nora peeking out the window from behind a curtain. She drags him over and whispers, they're telling Vic Frohmeyer about us skipping Christmas. Vic Frohmeyer, we find out, is the unofficial head of the neighborhood that lives and breathes for their block. Vic is played by the man, the myth, the legend, Dan Aykroyd. But back to Vic, he is the neighborhood busybody and should really find another neighborhood that has strict HOA regulations so he can be around his people. But no, he's here across the street from the Cranks' house. We see the Scoutmaster hurriedly telling Vic about the atrocity. He says, the Cranks stiffed the Scouts on the tree this year. And I'm sorry, but it didn't sound like they were pre-orders. Rather, they were just running on assumptions. I want out of this town. It's fucking scary. Just then, predatory music starts to play as Vic lays eyes on the Crank's residence. And suddenly, I hear Tamara's favorite predatory music playing in my head. Du-dun-t. His expression says, not in my neighborhood, while his block posse sits judgmentally behind him. Later that evening, Luther is in his front yard taking out the recyclables. He's wearing the same giant blue coat that he was wearing in the rain the other day, a coat that looks like it's three sizes too big for him, a coat that would either be used to cover up his pregnancy or be used by three raccoons to pass as human. He is approached by Vic, who is in an amazing coat of plaid with like little fur detailings around it, who relays the whole neighborhood is gonna miss Blair this year. Luther informs him of their decision to skip Christmas, and Vic is taken aback. He tells Luther that Christmas has always been a neighborhood thing, and some people on the block are pretty upset about the Crank's non-participation. Luther says, rightfully so, that it's not up to them, and he wishes everyone would respect their wishes. Vic nods seriously before handing Luther a flyer. It is printed on festive green paper and reads, "Hey neighbors, it's time to put up your Frosties." That's Frosty the Snowman. Luther tries to protest, because why is he going to put up Frosty if they're not even going to be the... But Vic has disappeared, as if into thin air, before he can finish his sentence.
Ooh, Vic Frohmeyer. When they had that one scene where Vic was facing away from the Crank's house, he has the most perfect little bald spot on the back of his head.
Yeah.
Yes. Dan Aykroyd has a beautiful bald spot. I used to have a big crush on him when I saw him in Ghostbusters way back in the day.
Aww.
Yeah. I had crushes on weird people.
It was Egon for me.
Yeah.
Speaking of weird people.
We had very different tastes. Yeah.
Yeah.
You liked River Phoenix. I liked Cece DeVille.
Yes.
And Dan Aykroyd.
But you know, your crush is still alive and mine died in a tragic drug overdose. Quite young. So there you go.
Which is shocking. You'd imagine it would be the other way around.
Yeah. For real. Yeah.
80s hair band guitarist still alive and kicking that was on cocaine for admittedly like 8 or 9 years straight. And yeah, he looks like he was on cocaine for 8 or 9 years straight. I'll give him that.
You have a lot of sleep to make up for if you, you know, when you're on cocaine for 8 or 9 years straight.
Yeah. Anyways, the next day, all the neighbors have heard the news. Luther is approached by Walt, a curmudgeon-y older man, and his sweet wife, Bev. The elderly couple lives directly across the street, and Walt and Luther have previous beef and don't seem to like each other at all. This is evident by Walter calling Luther old man, even though Walt is at least 20 years older than him, and he tells Luther that skipping Christmas is stupid. But Luther doesn't care what Walt thinks. A little later at work, Luther's getting even more slack as a bunch of his coworkers tell him, "Bah, humbugs." Luther asks his secretary if there are any messages, and she says sassily, "Yeah, I got a call from Santa who tells me I gotta go to Walmart to get my own cheap perfume this year." And Luther wisely retreats from the thinly veiled animosity into his office. I don't get that. If she doesn't like the perfume and thinks it's cheap and from Walmart anyways, then why is she complaining about not getting it? Is it just the principality of it?
So her boss is like making such a big deal about not getting gifts and not giving gifts and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, yeah, like we care because your gifts are shitty and they don't have anything to do with what we would like.
She needs to be giving her a Christmas fucking bonus if he's so rolling in it as he seems to be.
Yes.
Needs to be passing her some shekels instead of some cheap perfume.
Exactly. Which was the point she was making.
I don't know. Sounds like he's gotten her cheap perfume before.
Well, exactly.
Sounds like a reoccurring thing.
Exactly. Which is why she was like, fuck off, old man.
I think she needs to get a new job. While he's in his office, Nora calls. She is frantically peeking out her second floor window of their bedroom as she's on the phone. Vic and some of the other neighborhood folk are at their front door demanding she bring out Frosty. Luther is irritated that she's making such a big deal. They're outside, she's inside. What's the worst that can happen? Vic from outside the Crank's house hollers like a hostage negotiator. You don't even need to do anything, Nora. We'll take care of everything. Just bring us Frosty. Nora relays the message to Luther on the phone, who says, absolutely not. They can't have Frosty. It's the principal now. The neighbors and Vic are relentless, and Nora, in a panic, jumps into her bed, throws the covers over her head, and hisses, "Easy for you to say! You're miles away while I'm right here dealing with all of this!" Mm-hmm. Luther agrees that she's in a crap situation and tells her to meet him at the mall to get some distance from the frosty mob.
Did you see what he was eating for lunch at his desk?
No. Was it a Lunchable?
A Dannon Light and Fit yogurt with a Diet Coke. Product placement, ahoy. And at least they have the man eating the shitty diet meal. I will say, there are many things that I do not like about this movie. The one saving grace of this movie, well, there's a couple saving graces, but this is one of them, is they have him eating the fucking shitty ass diet meal. And then later they have him being concerned about their cosmetic looks.
Luther. Oh, what was it? What were we going to say about Luther? I forgot. Our catchphrase that we were going to say throughout it.
I'm like, fuck off, Luther. That's not what it was.
Damn it, Luther. No, that's not what it was. Luther, you bastard. No, that doesn't sound right.
No.
Well, I mean, it sounds right.
Yeah.
A few minutes later, we see Nora pull out of the garage, practically in disguise. She's wearing a thick parka with the hood over her head. Nothing to see here. She feels emboldened when Walt waves goodbye to her, but a few more houses down, a narc neighbor recognizes her and runs after her car yelling, "Vic, she's leaving!" She's so focused on the narc that she almost runs into a giant frosty figure that two kids are carting across the street. She rolls down her window partially to apologize to them when Vic catches up to her and grabs onto her window and pleads his case to get frosty. Nora's freaked out and begins flooring it while simultaneously rolling up her window. She shuts Vic's gloved hands into the window before he loses his balance and falls away from her car, leaving nothing but gloves behind. Nora, thinking she's safe, breathes a sigh of relief before noticing the gloves and screams, thinking she de-handed Vic.
Don't blame her.
He kind of would deserve it, though.
Oh, for real? Like, that's fucking scary as hell. What the hell, man?
Ugh. That's borderline assault. That is borderline assault.
Vic, you deserve what you got there.
When there's something strange in the neighborhood, who are you going to call? Not Vic Frohmeyer.
I am afraid of Vic Frohmeyer. Yeah. Vic Frohmeyer scares the shit out of me.
Who are you going to call? Not Vic Frohmeyer.
Yes. After she thinks she de-handed Vic, I wrote Nora a short little note, a love letter, if you will. Mm. Well, dear.
Okay.
Dear Nora, leave your husband. Leave this town. Leave it all behind. There's a better future out there for you. Signed, a concerned citizen.
Got a little teary-eyed.
Thank you.
So beautiful and so fitting.
Cut to the mall. Nora is downing a beer in a booth across from Luther and ranting, "It's the women who have to handle Christmas, not the men. You're not on the front lines having to deal with the repercussions of your harebrained scheme." Luther tries appeasing her with a surprise he got for their trip. He makes her close her eyes before producing an itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow hibiscus flower bikini that she wore for the first time today. Nora opens her eyes and snatches the slip of fabric from her husband and informs him, "It's too small, and I will not be wearing that in public." He, in turn, produces a blue banana hammock for himself and tells her, "It's not for the cruise. I got a great deal at the mall tanning salon." So it's okay to ignore Christmas entirely and not spend money on tax-deductible donations or anything like
here
that.
Oh, she goes.
But
she's on a rampage.
You, but tanning is okay. That good on you there.
Because it's cruise related, not Christmas related. So it can be in the spend category.
Oh, okay.
If it's cruise related, okay. Christmas related, not okay.
What if I need my spirits to be lifted by having a beautiful Christmas tree in my living room to help me get jazzed up and ready for the cruise?
Ooh, that's a gray area.
Mm. That's a toughie.
I would say Luther would probably say fuck no, but I would allow it, Corinne.
Thank you. Thank you. You're a good friend.
Mm-hmm.
Luther thinks it's important that they get some pre-cruise color. Next, we see them making their way to Tans Forever for their light browning. Light browning, really? Luther introduces Nora to the most unhelpful sales girl ever. She greets Mr. Crank enthusiastically, but when he introduces his wife, the sale girl, who looks like she takes full advantage of her employee discount, as she looks like the same color as Donald Trump Oompa Loompa orange with the little white bits around the eyes, gives her some serious side eye. She's like, oh, Luther, you're so funny, you old hag over there. Yeah, you need to go somewhere out of my sight, is basically what she's like.
Oh, God. This made me, I was like, my hackles were up the whole time. Because I, after working so many years in retail, I'm like, bitch, what is your problem? Seriously, she's just like nasty towards Nora for no reason. Like, she walks in the door and she's like, bitch, I got your number. Mm-hmm, I see you.
Well, you
it
know.
It almost seems like she has a crush on Luther.
Yes.
But Luther's nothing to shake a stick at.
No, but I think Luther let loose his rare charming moment and was like, hey, cruise, cruise, tan, tan, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, hee, 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 maybe he'll take me on the cruise, you know.
Oh, my God. I have yet to see Luther's charming side, and I watched this whole movie many times.
Changing it to, nope, Luther, nope.
No, no.
The super shitty to her salesperson puts Nora off. She does not want to do this and hisses to Luther. I thought the point of a cruise was to get tan on the cruise. He assures her it will be worth it, as they both look like a pair of uncooked chickens, and Nora reluctantly agrees. She retreats to her personal tanning room, dons the tiny bathing suit, which she looks amaz in, and looks at her yes. reflection and says, God, this should be outlawed. But ultimately gets into the tanning bed. Her session is interrupted by Squiggy, who warped over from Laverne and Shirley Land to just barge in, squeak, and run out, surprising Nora, causing her to jerk up and hit her head on the tanning bed lid and start bleeding. We all know that head wounds, like, bleed the worst. Nora takes the tiniest towel and finds the copper sales girl, that's putting it very generously, Tam, thank you, and asks for mm-hmm, a Band-Aid. Mm-hmm. Nora hears her name being called from the salon entrance as the sales girl resentfully is like, oh, I guess I'll try and find something for you. And Nora is mortified to see Father Zabriskie gawking at her. She simultaneously tries covering her body and her bleeding head with the tiny towel. It's about the size of a hand towel.
Mm-hmm.
While he asks, is it true that she and Luther are skipping Christmas? A crowd gathers behind the father, and Nora frantically pleads, can I please get another towel? The sales girl sneers at her audacity and barks, I'm looking for Band-Aid. Make up your mind, lady. Geez. Because she 100% can't do two things at once.
I think she tanned her brain. I think that poor lady has fried the recesses of her mind.
She is so gloriously tan, Tamara. You don't even understand. Okay?
So I guess it was worth it. Because even though she can't form a conscious stream of thought.
Consciousness.
She looks good. She at least looks. Yeah, she looks good.
Yeah. Nora informs the clergyman that she and Luther are fine. When Luther emerges in his banana hammock, he heard that Nora was hurt and is concerned, and also about, how in the hell did he get so much tanner from being in there like 30 seconds longer? I don't know.
Yeah.
You say 35% more tan than when he arrived. I say about 70% more tan when he arrived. He is just a shade away from the sales girl. He can only muster a half-hearted, hey, when he sees the father and the substantial crowd that's gathered behind him. Oh, there's nowhere I'd rather be than in my Speedo in the lobby of a mall.
This throws me off because they're supposed to be in a small, quaint town where everybody knows everybody. Yeah. They go to this very large mall to do this tan thingy. Mm-hmm. And everybody passing by stops behind Father Zabrinsky. Like, they know Luther and Nora and, like, want the tea. But I'm like, that, no. That, no, that does not compute. That mall looks like it's in a big city or at least a moderately populated town. And if I saw that scene, I would just walk right by and be like, I don't give a fuck what's going on.
I totally agree with you.
The next day, Luther shows Nora the very local paper that they have made the front page on. It shows them flabbergasted at the desk of the tanning salon in their skimpy suits and outlines how they are skipping Christmas.
What
Nora
the fuck?
Reads the article aloud.
This fucking neighborhood. Right. This fucking neighborhood. The fucking paper.
Mm-hmm. Who the hell would be passing by and see them and be like, who are these scantily clad people that Father Zabrinsky is talking to? And then doing the research in the background to figure out what was going on in their lives and then putting it on a paper like anybody else would care.
Just like, oh. Let's talk about the scouts in their tree. Like, fucking... Yes, let's take a picture of two people scantily clad and talk about them not celebrating Christmas. Oy.
Uh-huh. And that sucks, too, because I know that Jamie Lee Curtis looks fucking awesome in her bathing suit. She's not like how she was in that fucking movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger. What's the name of it? True Lies or something.
Okay. Yeah.
God, she's wow. Like, her body is... Mm. She plays like the same character. She's kind of like this reserved mother that has to like come out of her shell and play like she's a spy. But then when she does, she's like va-va-voom.
Right.
But she's more svelte. But even here, like, she looks awesome, but she doesn't feel great. And yet that's the picture that they decide to put in the newspaper on the front fucking page.
Oh.
Her in a too small bikini that she does not like with a bloody head and a 70% tanner husband.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Not a good look.
Anyways, yeah. Nora reads aloud. Their darkened house was a dark spot on the neighborhood and quite possibly why Hemlock Street finished a disappointing sixth in the neighborhood decorating competition where they usually have a win.
Ooh. Ooh.
The article outlines that many unidentified neighbors are anti-crank and describe their decision as a rotten display of selfishness. Nora gets worked up at the backlash and brushes her teeth in a huff.
In a huff.
She bitterly informs Luther that she may not come back from the cruise. The neighbors are being jerks, and perhaps she doesn't want to be part of this neighborhood anyways. Luther is loving all of this and reminds her, just two more days and we are out of here. The next day, when Nora's volunteering with her ladies of the ladies' luncheon, one of her friends comes in sobbing. She tells the group that Bev Scheel, Nora's sweet neighbor and Walt's wife, has cancer for the third time, and it's spreading, and this may be her last Christmas.
Aww.
Back at home, Luther pulls into his driveway and is immediately confronted by Walter, who sees fit to tell Luther again what a stupid idea skipping Christmas is. Luther retorts, "You know, I wondered how the paper got that perfect shot of the front of our house." Things begin escalating, but then Nora arrives home and swoops in. She puts a gentle hand on Walt's shoulder and tells him that she just heard about Bev, and if they need anything, just to let her know. Luther can read between the lines and smartly stands down.
Mm-hmm.
Fucker.
Oh, man. Oh, Luther. Whoa, oh, Luther, that man. Next, we see the cranks making dinner when there's a knock on the door. It's two police officers played by Cheech Marin and Jake Busey. They're part of the Officers Benevolent Association, selling their calendars again. They remind Luther that the calendars are their huge charitable moneymaker for the year, and Busey lets the calendar flop open to a page where he's in the centerfold, sexily tipping his hat. Luther informs them that he doesn't need a calendar this year. And I'm like, no, the calendar is for the year. It's not even Christmas.
See, and he said he was going to match his charitable donations. And if it's for charity, then wouldn't that be a charitable donation that he said he was going to match? So soon you get one?
Yes. Also the tree. He should have gotten a tree, too, because
it benefits
the Scouts.
The
Boy Scouts.
Oh, hypocrite. Hypocrite. Luther Crank is a hypocrite.
Yes. And Nora's like, hey, it goes to the Scouts. We could have just, if you didn't want the tree up in the house, waste of a gross tree, but still. you could have put it in the backyard because she's like, that money goes towards the scouts. But no, he's like, it has
to be. We talked about this. It's one of those magical trees that looks shitty on the outside and bomb on the inside.
Okay. You are very right about it. And I think that the house that we later see the Christmas tree on, they probably got that tree and it does look great on the inside. You're right. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. You know what also looks great? The cop's calendar looks great on the inside.
Jake Busey, no shade to him, but he's always, like, in a lot of movies, played kind of like the bad guy because he has a really intense look about him, or the bully. So seeing him, like, splayed out in a sexy cop costume, I just didn't buy it. And I was wondering, too, I'm like, Cheech Marin, hopefully you know what Cheech Marin looks like, because I couldn't imagine him doing a sexy pose in that calendar either. Hopefully they got the 12 hottest cops in the precinct to actually pose for this calendar. And if Jake Busey was one of them, then I would not be rushing to buy that calendar either.
But he does look kind of like a Ken doll, so... You know,
he does.
Cheech Marin does not look like a Ken doll, although I gotta say,
he does not.
I would be very interested to see his pose in the calendar.
He'd probably be the one that would be like ballsy and just like, just get me naked and I'll just have my cop hat like strategically placed in front of my junk so nothing's showing, and I'll have my like finger in front of my face like, what's behind this hat?
Shh, secrets. Yes. So the cops explain all of the different good causes this money will go towards, but Luther, he's like, no. And he slams the door because, yes, why would you possibly give to charity? Ugh, so lame. And why would you need a calendar in your house? Ugh, like keeping track of the days. So last year, am I right? Calendar joke. The cops then go to Walt's house across the street and tattle about how cheap Luther is just as a van full of carolers show up. Ah! I love this part. A chipper lady dressed up in period garb asks if the cranks are home, or perhaps Jewish? Walter happily tells them that they are there and they really need the holiday spirit. I was like, yeah, you go, Walter. Because they are skipping Christmas. The carolers immediately set up camp in front of the cranks' house. This is a Christmas emergency, obviously. And I highly approve of Walt punking the cranks with carolers. They need to sing the Christmas cheer into them. Inside, Luther and Nora perform tactical maneuvers to appear as if they are not home. Hark, hear the bells, sweet, hear the bells. They all seem to say, so cares away. The caroling is relentless. On with the cheer, on with good cheer, on with the home, on to the home. And Luther thinks they have been set up. They have been. Merry-ring while people sing songs of good cheer. Christmas is here. We must agree as the camera pans out and we see all the neighbors who have joined the carolers in their rendition of, I've changed it to hark, hear the bells instead of jingle bells. Merry, 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 merry Christmas. Merry, 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 merry Christmas. They all sing. It gets more frantic and frenzied, almost like an acoustic weapon. When the singing stops, the cranks relax a little and retire to the living room. Nora sits by the window and sorts through some yarn for a project. But when she straightens, the mob of carolers are there. They see her and dive into an enthusiastic rendition of Frosty the Snowman. Because guess who doesn't have Frosty up on their roof? It's them. Nora screams, ah! And Luther guides her down to the basement, which is currently the quietest room in the house. But while they're down there, the furnace glows menacingly on their Frosty decoration's face, because he should really be up on the roof. Are they being punished? Yes, yes, they are. We next get a montage of the battle for or against Christmas. The neighborhood kids start posting signs in the crank's yard that say, Free Frosty! Nora passes a group. Okay, now, the whole Frosty debacle. Mm-hmm. I understand my dad was like, I'm not going to fucking do shit with my front yard because my next door neighbor cares so much about what I do with my front yard, right? Like the whole passive aggressive push and pull kind of thing of it all. But all years prior, they put fucking Frosty up on the roof. How is it going to hurt them to put fucking Frosty up on their roof, particularly when you have Lou or whatever the fuck his name is saying, hey, you don't have to put Frosty on the roof. We'll put him up there for you. Just do it. And instead, he's just like, no, no Frosty.
I don't know if you know this, Corinne. I don't know if you know this, but Luther's an asshole.
Oh, yeah. Wait.
I didn't want to break it to you until we were done. He's an asshole. Yeah.
Oh, I hadn't quite figured that out because I just thought that he was like really concerned about cultivating a safe space for everyone. And it was just misunderstood.
Yes. And he's not procrastinating. He's not waiting till the last minute to put up those decorations. He's just putting his foot down and he is not moving it, no matter how much everybody wishes he would.
Oh, so the neighborhood kids want Frosty freed. I want free Frosties as well. Nora passes a group of school-aged girls who wish her a Merry Christmas, and she looks at them fondly but doesn't say it back because solidarity with her lame-ass husband. Luther, in an effort to thwart the holiday spirit from approaching his door again. Okay, fuck off, Luther. I am sorry. This... See, Tamara thinks this is actually funny. I don't think this is funny. He sprays down the sidewalk and sprays the fucking cat of his, dying from cancer neighbor from across the street and husband and freezes it in ice. Super cute look there. So that his front walk is an entire ice skating rink. And he succeeds in having the mail carrier fall on his sidewalk, which he celebrates. He's like, yeah! Like, the fucking guy is trying to deliver your mail to you. And you're taking joy in him falling on his ass. The carolers and Nora, as she rushes out to try and help the fallen, also, it's like a fucking bowling alley with pins just falling all over the place. And Tamara, you,
yeah.
How's it going there for you? Because you seem to be delighting in this.
I am delighting in your horror. It's almost like a scary movie that I just tell myself, it's fake. It's fake. That's not real, which is how I can keep laughing at it. And I'm also, sidebar, just super glad that you got that section because I don't feel like we've heard you sing enough in this holiday episode of ODK. So, well done.
They only have 2 more days to go. Nora is pissed at Luther for making the front walk an ice skating rink, which is rightfully so. And I say, why not just spend a couple of nights in a fucking hotel that's not that expensive and gets them out of their neighborhood, for fuck's sake?
Luther's also cheap. Not when it comes to tanning stuff, but everything else seems to be too expensive.
Yeah, he's into cosmetic procedures, surprisingly, which shocks the hell out of me.
Uh-huh. If you thought that last part was shocking, get a load of this.
I can't wait.
The next day, Nora is volunteering at a children's hospital, reading how the Grinch stole Christmas to a group of kids. She sees Luther there, but doesn't think much of it until they meet later and his eyebrows are practically touching his hairline.
Ooh.
They eat in the hospital lunchroom and she asks, "What's wrong with your face?" And Luther proudly admits it. He got Botox. And we get a hilarious scene where he tries to eat a container of peaches, but they all fall out of his mouth because his face is so tight.
Hilarious? I thought it was funny. Mark?
I thought it was funny. I thought it was great because he tries to put them in. And maybe it's like harkening back to when my sister used to get her braces tightened. And for some inexplicable reason, my mom would go get my sister's braces tightened. And then we'd go out to lunch afterwards. And my sister would just sit there and like try to put food in her mouth and it would just spill right back out. It tickled me so.
Oh, my God. It's so gross and awkward. You also did not mention that he looks like a member of Miami Vice. He's a few years late with the look, though, as Miami Vice ended in 1989.
Mm-hmm. He had the pastels. He had the dark skin.
And he had the white jacket and...
Yeah. He had the hairline touching brows.
Yeah, he looked practically Vulcan. It was interesting.
And we get a hilarious to Tamara scene.
Yes.
Where he tries to eat a container of peaches.
Okay, but like, also... Whose idea was this? This is some Hallmark bullshit right here. Because the set designers, they are out to lunch and they have fucking cups of peaches. Like plastic containers of peaches. Like you pack in your lunch.
See, it took me a long time to figure this out. Because at first, the first 17 times I watched this movie, I thought they were at a restaurant. And I'm like, what kind of restaurant sells containers of peaches like that? And then it dawned on me. Oh, they're in the hospital like lunchroom. That's where people can eat their lunch that they bring, or they might very well have containers of peaches because that would be something that they give to the patients upstairs.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that explanation. That I can get behind.
Oh no, but it took me like 17 times to be like, who the fuck sells peaches? Is that on the kids menu? Luther, are you eating off the kids menu? Nora complains that this year's been depressing because their home doesn't feel like Christmas, as Luther forgoes the spoon and begins pouring the fruit into his mouth and almost chokes. Nora is oblivious to the perils of Botox eating and bemoans, "And you've been so self-involved lately." But Luther's not paying much attention either because he's too busy lightly stabbing his cheek with the fork because he can't feel a thing. But nothing gets resolved, and they retreat home and pack for their trip. It's a mere 24 hours now. Time's a ticking away till they're free and clear on the cruise. Then all of their problems will be over. Their packing keeps getting interrupted by the phone, though, which the first times is Spike calling, which is Vic Frohmeyer's 9-ish-year-old son.
And he is played by Eric Persullivan, who played Dewey on Malcolm in the Middle.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was. I had to keep not calling him Dewey.
Yeah, and he's a highlight in this movie, I would say.
Yeah. The first two times it was not Dewey, but Spike, Vic Frohmeyer's 9-ish-year-old son, and his cronies chanting, free Frosty, into the phone. The third time the phone rings, Luther picks it up and snarls, Frosty's dead! But it's not Spike, and whoever is on the other end of the phone will completely change the trajectory of this movie. The person who's on the other end of the phone is... Find out with us after this break.
We're back. It's Blair, their daughter. Nora squeals so loud the whole neighborhood can hear as she rushes to the second line. Blair informs them that she's just landed in Miami. She's coming home for Christmas and she's not coming alone. She's fallen in love with her college classmate, Enrique. He's a doctor. While they were in Peru, and he asked her to marry him. So she's bringing her fiancé home so that he can experience a bona fide crank Christmas. Luther is livid, banging his head against the wall dramatically. And all his Botox has magically disappeared. He has the one scene where he is very Botoxed and then never again after that peach scene. Apparently, the peaches cured his Botox.
And we know that's not true because we've seen plenty of celebrities that are post-Botox and you could tell like, oh, she's about 6 days out. Oh, she's about 3 days out. Oh, she needs a new inject because it just like fucks with your face and it makes it so tight. But then ultimately it kind of like relaxes. Not that I would know. I don't do Botox.
There's the look of just... I just got filler or I just got Botox versus I'm a good month or two out and things look more natural. Yes.
Yes.
I think that a lot of people, they're like, oh no, I have this thing happening. I need to get my face freshened up, which I understand like the entertainment industry is a rough industry to be in. But then... they need to be thinking about that 2 months beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But instead they're like the day before and they're, or a week before and it's not enough time.
And then you like fill up your face till it looks weird and then it starts slowly deflating. So then it looks good. and then normal. And then it sags because guess what? You filled that shit up. And now that it's kind of going away and seeping into your system, your skin sags even more. And so it's a never ending vicious cycle.
I know. Once you pop, you can't stop. But fortunately, Luther's horrible Botox experience was cured by peaches falling out of his mouth. And
that's why I was laughing, Corinne, because when he was eating those peaches, it wasn't the physical humor that was making me chuckle. Uh-huh. It's the fact that I was like, your Botox is going to go straight away, sir. Did you know that?
Suddenly, like, our podcast catches on in the celebrity crowd, and all of these people are like buying peaches and like throwing them all over their face to like help soften things up a little. But they said it was on ODK that it would help.
Ugh. That's right, because we're the experts.
Yes. Speaking of which, at my work, both Barbara, who does our billing, and I each got an email that said, Dr. Barbara and Dr. Corinne. And then they were like, are you still interested in an x-ray thing or something like that? And which is not anything that either of us are interested in. And Barbara wrote to the boss man. She's like, hey, guess I got a degree when I wasn't looking. And I said, me too.
Did you go out and get your PhD without telling me, Corinne?
In first name only. I'm not Dr. Edding. I'm Dr. Corinne.
Don't you get to pick? I'm sure you could pick if you want to have your first name or your last name as the what follows the doctor. They should let you do that because you were in school fucking long enough and probably paid up the wazoo to get your degree.
Nora is ecstatic that her baby girl is coming home and also that her husband's horrible Botox job got
magically cleared up.
It got canceled by peaches. Yes, because well, there's Botox and then there's what happened to his face. They find out that Blair and her fiance are going to arrive that night at 8 p.m., just in time for the famous Christmas Eve party. Nora plays it off. Yeah, just in time for the famous Christmas Eve party. And Luther flops defeated onto the bed. Once they hang up, Nora switches gears. She puts on her fucking Christmas sweater and turtleneck and begins doing damage control. Luther asks, what about the cruise? Fuck the cruise. But Nora shuts that shit down. They are going to pull together a Christmas celebration miracle out of Luther's dumpster fire of an idea, and Blair will never know that they tried to skip Christmas.
Never! Never! And first, Nora needs to get food for their non-existent party, and Luther's directed to go find a Christmas tree. He heads to the Boy Scouts Christmas tree lot, but it's slim pickings. There's one sad little Charlie Brown Christmas bush that Luther accidentally runs over. And after the Scoutmaster and his kid give him a hard time and inflate the price, Luther walks away with the $75 piece of crap tree. He races home, and by the time he gets into his driveway, all the needles have fallen off. So he trashes it and then sees his neighbor Wes packing his car to leave town and gets a banner idea. He rushes over and asks if he can borrow Wes's tree since they're not going to need it. And Wes thinks Luther's predicament is hilarious and says no. But after some coaxing, he ultimately hands Luther his key and tells him, you break one ornament on that tree and we're both dead.
Okay, so super nice on the part of Wes. Like, I thought that was a really sweet gesture. Would I trust Luther with any fucking thing? No. Would I trust Nora? Yes. But I would be like, you can't touch it. You give those keys to Nora and let her handle the tree. Mm-mm.
I don't think Wes has that much forward thinking. And I think that him and Luther are pretty tight because every time Wes's wife comes around, she's like, we gotta go. So it's like, say goodbye to your friend and let's get out of here. So I think that Wes and Luther are pretty thick. I think they're like thick as thieves. And so that's like his boy. And he's like, yeah, you whatever. I'm not thinking about the ornaments or the tree or what my wife's going to do when she sees it back in the house and knows for sure that somebody is taking it out and putting it back. But, you know, it's the holidays.
And yeah, Luther's super nice of Wes to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Luther solicits the help of Spike, and after some gentle coaxing, and by coaxing I mean he chases Spike down the street and tackles him, but surprisingly, Spike agrees to help. He gets his little red wagon, and they get busy with the stealthy tree transfer. Inside Wes's living room, Luther reiterates to Spike that they can't break any ornaments, just as he hears a crash. Spike has dropped an ornament that reads Baby's First Christmas, but tells Luther it's nothing and tosses the evidence. The tree is huge, and it turns out that their stealthy transfer has caught the attention of the neighbors, who think Luther has lost his mind and call the cops on him. Once the tree is on the wagon, Luther tries to precariously wheel it across the street, but he is stopped by the same two cops with the fundraising calendars. Luther tries to explain and turns to Spike to vouch for him, but Spike's fight-or-flight instinct kicked in and he was gone. The cops, thirsty for donation revenge, load Luther into the back of their car and tell him, he should have bought a calendar. You're going to need one where you're going. But right before they pull away, Spike Frohmeyer magically shows up at the passenger window and tells the fuzz that they did have permission to take the tree and shows them Wes's key. So Luther gets released and he and Spike finally make it into the Crank's house with the slightly disheveled tree.
That was sweet of Spike. He didn't need to do that.
Yeah. I know. I'm like, is he channeling his papa as like the head of the block? And he's like, you know, I don't like this guy, but I got to help him because we're neighbors.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Nora's at the grocery store and she is on a mission. She cheerily asks the clerk where he keeps the honey-baked ham, because that is Blair's most favorite. He says, well, if there's any left, they'll be down that aisle. A sweet-looking lady, sweet with parentheses around it, air quotes, lady nearby seems very interested in the conversation and begins quickly walking where the clerk directed. She's flanking Nora for a bit before Nora catches on and begins walking faster, causing the lady to walk faster. They are practically in a full side-by-side run before Nora slams right into a shopper's basket, falls onto it, and rolls into a holiday display. They, quote, sweet lady, triumphantly grabs the last honey-baked ham and bids Nora Merry Christmas. Fuck off, lady. But nothing keeps Nora down, and we next see her squealing at a young family who are at the checkout line. They have a coveted ham. Nora offers to pay any price for their honey-baked. At first, they are reluctant, but she tries appealing to the young mother holding a toddler, telling her, you know, it's never too late to put a little something away for college. Cut to Nora happily walking down the parking lot with her prize, honey-baked ham. Checky, checky. She almost gets sideswiped by a car, which causes her plastic bag to break and her ham to fucking begin rolling because it's in a tin. So this is no...
That surprised the hell out of me. When she's like, honey-baked ham, that's Blair's favorite. I thought it was going to be like, you know, a honey-baked ham situation where it's like a beautiful ham
yeah.
that they like put in beautiful wrapping and it's cost like $70. But hers is the crap that you get in a can yeah. for like $14.99.
Yes.
That looks almost like a cross between dog food and lunch meat.
Uh-huh. And it has a lot of gelatin around it. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes. And lots of gelatin. It's 90% gelatin, 10% ham.
You know, and I was like, that's pretty on the nose there when Luther says that later. It was one of the few things I agreed with him on.
Which part?
90% gelatin, 10% ham. He says that to the neighbors. The neighbors later.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah, I thought I was completely original with that thought. Damn it, I have internalized a Lutherism and played it as my own. Damn.
Somebody's watched Christmas with the Cranks too much. I am so excited when we get to the end and I find out why you like this movie. So, yes, the ham is in a tin, and so it begins rolling down the asphalt into the street. Nora tries her darndest to stop it, but the ham is too fast, and she gets blocked by a car that screeches to a halt right in front of her. She watches helplessly as a semi-truck runs over the ham, just obliterating it. Nora moans over the meaty mush that is unsalvageable. She makes it home, but she's in a tizzy because she called all their friends and everyone has plans. She asks Luther to unpack the car, and she's in even more of a tizzy when she sees the sad state of their tree. Luther can't hear criticisms over the smoked trout that he's plucked out of the grocery bag for their party. He asks, "Where's the honey-baked ham?" And Nora stops dead in her tracks and snarls, "Never say honey-baked ham in this house again." Just then, the phone rings and it's Blair. She's in Atlanta now and has a few more last-minute food requests for Mom to make. What Blair wants, Blair gets. So Nora hangs up and heads back out for more supplies. Before she leaves, she tells Luther to put Frosty up and call all the neighbors and invite them to the party. Oh, Luther, that's going to be fun.
Uh-huh. Dun, dun, dun. You're going to have to eat some crow, old man.
Mm-hmm.
While Luther attempts to haul a snowman, Frosty, that's bigger than him onto his roof, Nora's in the liquor store buying libations. A small white-haired gentleman greets her warmly and wishes her a Merry Christmas. He takes note of all her purchases and asks, "Oh, big party tomorrow?" Nora informs him, no, it's today, because their daughter's coming home. He smiles and says, "Blair, right?" Nora's surprised because she has no duckin' idea who this guy is, but she's desperate, so she invites him to the party, and he happily accepts. Back on the roof, Luther has caught the attention of Vic Frohmeyer, who rushes out to give him help. That guy comes back in later, which is the reason why I included it, because it was kind of out of left field.
When I read that portion of your script before I saw it, and I was like, oh, that's got to be Santa. It's got to be Santa. And then I see the guy when I watched it with my own eyes, and I was like, that can't be Santa. That can't be Santa. Maybe he's one of his helpers. No. I don't know. I was just trying to puzzle it out in my head because I was like, it's the Santa moment. It's the Santa moment. But then I was like, I don't, this guy's like not like jolly, not like he's like kind of scrawny and small. I was like, he does not look very Santa-y.
He is not. He's not Santa-ish at all. Back on the roof,
reindeer's paws.
Luther has caught the attention of Vic Frohmeyer, who rushes out to give him unhelpful advice like, "Watch your balance." Thanks. Luther teeters on the roof long enough that the whole neighborhood has now gathered down below, so there's a full crowd present as he loses his balance, drops Frosty, who crashes into hundreds of pieces, onto the pavement, and Luther, who helplessly slides down the roof after him. Thankfully, Luther gets tangled in the rope and is suspended a few feet into the air. Someone calls the fire department, and their sirens are in the distance as Nora drives up. I love the way Nora says, "Luther!" Like, just the way she calls him, which she says a lot, like, almost incredulous and panicky and what-the-fuckity in her voice. "Luther!" She hurries over to her husband in a panic as the firefighters begin cutting him down poorly because he falls to the ground. Somebody forgot to hold him up. And is ushered to an ambulance. It appears Luther is largely unhurt when Vic finds him and asks, "What gives? I thought you were skipping Christmas." And both he and Nora sheepishly explain that Blair's coming home with her boyfriend, so they're scrambling to give her a festive homecoming. Vic takes control and stands up on the ambulance tailgate and begins directing the neighbors like a well-oiled machine. Aww. He tells everyone, "Gather as much food and decorations as you can. Get dressed and be back at the cranks in a half an hour." A voice in the group protests, "Why should we help them?" And Vic assures them, "We are doing this for Blair. She's the only one who babysat all your kids and made you feel like family every summer when she came home. Aww. And why should the daughter suffer for the sins of the father?" The crowd murmurs in agreement, and Nora looks on gratefully. And then they disperse. But Vic has one more request. The same two centerfold police officers are standing nearby, and Vic orders them to go to the airport to pick up Blair. They scoff, saying, "Pshh, we're not supposed to do that." And Vic steals his gaze and asks, "Do I need to call the chief?" Which causes the officers to agree and reluctantly drive off. Right. Fucking right. Because they're supposed to be patrolling the streets on the clock. And they're just going to take a tiny little detour to pick up somebody at the airport on Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. Real, real believable. Real, real believable.
If Vic Frohmeyer says jump, you say,
"Fuck you, Vic.
How high? How high?"
Oh, I would not say how high. No.
I thought it was a really beautiful moment where Vic rallied everyone around to help get the house ready for Blair.
No doubt. That was like one of my favorite parts. But when he talked to the officers, I'm like, that's where he lost me. That's completely unrealistic. Beautiful moment. Smudge at the end. That's just like, okay, so we're doing that? All right, sure. All right. I'm game.
The neighbors definitely rally, and we get a montage of everyone bringing their decorations over and giving the Crank house a Christmas makeover. The liquor store stranger arrives. Oh my God, it's the liquor store stranger. He greets Luther by name, and so then I'm thinking it's gotta be, and like, he knows like fucking Blair's name, he knows Luther's name, and then I'm like, he's really gotta be Santa because he hands a fucking honey baked ham to Nora, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I know this guy does not look like Santa, but he's gotta be Santa because she did not mention anything about the stinking tinned honey baked ham, although if he was really really Santa, he would have handed her a whole honey baked ham with like the golden foil around it that it was not a horrible can thing that right. Anyways,
as God intended ham to be.
God intended ham to be.
As God or Santa intended to be.
Yes. Pretty much the same thing.
Blasphemy.
Before greeting Father Zerinsky in the living room, both Luther and the father look at each other with a "who the hell is that guy?" shrug. Things are going smoothly until Blair calls. Her plane is arriving early. Her dad says, "Well, that's a hell of a tailwind." I'm like, he is just like, every moment, "Can I put a damper on this?" "Yeah, let me just put a damper on it." Yay!
And he's very good at it, too.
Fuck off, Luther. Everyone panics and Nora cries, "We'll never make it on time." But not on Frohmeyer's watch. Vic hatches a plan, and the cops arrive at the airport to meet Blair. They wait at their arrival gate with signs that read, oh, man. Things don't usually work this way when I'm watching a movie and Tamara has lovingly written a script. Usually I'll like watch a scene and then I'll read the script that follows the scene. But for some reason with this movie, I think I was watching and reading simultaneously. I don't know, something, because I read this before I saw it. And I was like, Blair and Enrique. Oh no. Oh no. And then I was like, I watched it and there's the two police officers, and Cheech has Blair, and then Busey has the letter N, Ricky. And I was like, great. Welcome. Bienvenidos, Enrique. Bienvenidos.
I can't believe that either, because Cheech Marin is Hispanic.
Yeah.
And Enrique is not an uncommon name, but he spelled it Enrique.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, John Grisham.
Yeah. Blair sees the police officers and is impressed. She says, wow, police escort. My dad must have been really generous with his donation this year. The cops give an uncomfortable, thinly veiled, fuck that guy chuckle, and take the couple's luggage back to the squad car. As Officer Busey is loading the truck, Officer Cheech gets an APB from Spike, who hacked into their police radios and urges the cops to stall. Cheech obliges and drives down the road super slow, but they still need more time. They are trying not to let Blair and Enrique onto their ruse, so Cheech gets the bright idea to pull down a dark alley under the guise of investigating something. They get out, shine their lights around some dumpsters, and figure they did enough when they hear glass breaking. They stumbled across an actual break-in, and after some hemming and hawing, because they have a party to go to, they decide to apprehend the perpetrator, which results in a foot chase that ends with the criminal getting tackled onto the back passenger window, much to Blair and Enrique's terror. And you have a comment, Tamara.
Yes, I do, Corinne. Thank you for asking. So then we see the cops successfully and safely deliver Blair and Enrique to the Crank household. And the criminal is still in the car when everybody gets out. So let's do the logistics. Cheech is driving. Busey's in the passenger seat. So they're both in the front. Blair and Enrique are in the back where they started. And then the criminal magically gets to the house. Did they put the criminal in the back with Blair and Enrique? Yes. Is my question.
Yes.
Holy balls. Like, Merry Christmas, Blair. Welcome home. Anyways, that was my question. So I'm like, what in the actual fuck just happened there? And what if he was dangerous?
He's handcuffed. And
you know how many people have peed in the back of squad cars? Spit, puke because they're too drunk? Like, a myriad of things could have happened. Bodily fluids could have been everywhere.
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 Fortunately, bodily fluids were not everywhere. Enrique appreciates that as being welcomed into that part of the community. That way would have been a baptism by fire.
Oh, God. Blair and Enrique at the outside of the Crank's house are greeted as if they're celebrities. They make their way inside and right into Nora and Luther's arms, mostly Nora's. Blair immediately introduces Enrique and then notices Luther's tan face. He scoffs because Nora assured him that if he wore a black turtleneck like Corinne, it would look less like a tan and not at all like a mob boss.
Blasphemy.
Outside, Spike is perusing the yard when he hears a man calling him over to the police car. It's the apprehended criminal who gives Spike a sob story about wanting his four kids to have a good Christmas and he hasn't eaten in 7 days.
Okay, wait. Let's just pause a moment because the window is partially rolled down like he's a dog or something. And it's like snowing weather. So that car is fucking cold as hell. Oh, no, let's make it colder by unrolling the window. Like, that does not even make sense.
I'm sure the crook was probably like, no, I need fresh air. Leave it open so I can entice an unsuspecting kid over here.
Good Hallmark explanation. Thank you, Tamara. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm full of them. I am full of them on this movie. What else
do
you want? The peaches cure Botox, Corinne. That's why they're in that scene. Spike takes pity on the crook and opens the door, telling him he has 20 minutes to go inside and get food and get warm. Back inside, Blair and Enrique are approached by the liquor store stranger who introduces himself as Marty, much to everyone's relief because no one knew who the fuck he was. He makes fast friends with Enrique because he lived in Peru, Enrique's home country, for 5 years. They duck away to discuss música because Marty toca la guitarra. At least that's what he said in his conversation.
That's what he did say.
Yes, he did. Across the party, we see the crook break away from Spike into the crowd and ultimately sneak up the stairs. Just as Enrique, Marty, and the two cops break into a Spanish holiday jam. They're accompanied by Abby on the pan flute and Vic Frommer on the accordion. Inexplicably, everyone knows this song, even though 2 out of the 6 people in this impromptu music group had a hard time spelling Enrique. The party's raging, and at the song's conclusion, Enrique proposes a toast. He thanks the cranks in the neighborhood for making him feel welcome, and everyone raises their glasses and looks at Luther expectantly, but he just puts his head down, causing Nora to pick up his slack, as she usually does.
Yes.
She raises her glass and says, "Thank you to everyone for making this the most memorable Christmas Eve. You've all truly taught me the meaning of community." Everyone nods in agreement, and Luther finally blurts out, "That goes the same for me, but double."
And I remember our catchphrase, "What the hell, Luther?"
I've got a bunch of catchphrases for that fucker now.
Nobody raises their glass to that shitty speech, and Luther goes into his kitchen to lick his wounds and drink alone, alone, alone. Eventually, Nora finds him and gives him shit for not even saying thank you to everybody who pulled together and made a lovely event. The house was transformed inside and out, and they were so warm and loving towards Blair and Enrique. She says, none of this would have been possible without the people in their neighborhood. When he still doesn't say anything, she realizes what's going on and says, you're still moping because we're not going on that cruise. Luther tells her, it's not too late. There's still time. We can go and Blair and Enrique can have the whole house to themselves. Nora is appalled. Blair and her very sweet boyfriend have just flown thousands of miles to be here, and all our neighbors gave up their Christmas Eve to help us. I thought that might move you a little. Honey, do you realize the man you're married to? Do we need to have it? Yes, we need to have an intervention for you. Oh, my gosh.
Oh. Her Christmas vest must be cutting off the circulation to her head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And all her other garments for the future and the past. Nora is appalled, and rightfully slow. Nora is appalled when Luther retorts, I've been planning this holiday for 6 whole weeks, which is probably longer than they've been dating. She realizes it's a lost cause, and she leaves in a tiny, in a huff. Luther is left alone again, and when a couple of late partygoers come through the door, he gets the perfect vantage point of Walter, his nemesis, and his wife Bev, who are having a quiet dinner at their house across the street. Nora's words seem to be eating away at him, so he takes the fucking tinned honey-baked ham across the fucking street as a peace offering. Tamara, how would you feel if I showed up to your house with a generous gift of a tinned ham?
I was going to say, if you come with a nice ham, I'd be happy to see you. But with a tinned ham, I would pretend like I didn't know you and close the door in your face.
Rightfully so.
Unless that was like your, you know, what do you call it? Unless that was like your guilty pleasure. Was like your holiday thing, like... my grandma, my meemaw on my dad's side used to always make this, and it's disgusting, but I love it and brings me back to that warm place. I'd be like, bring it on in. Let's cook that shit up and have a Merry Christmas, Corinne.
But you know what? A more portable version of something like that is the canned cranberry sauce. It's got the ridges.
I was going to say a can of Spam because it's about the same consistency.
Spam is delicious. There's lots of good uses for Spam.
Oh, if you brought me over a canned ham like they did in this scene, we would make giant Spam masubis with it. Just like cut off a big slice of ham, get a really big piece of seaweed, like a pot full of rice, wrap that shit up. Ugh.
It'd be like a casserole Christmas pan miracle of Spam masubi.
Masubi? Yes.
Honey baked Spam masubi. There we go. That's the proper term.
It now should be kind of getting excited, and I think you need to bring me a honey pig down so we can try that.
Oh, the things that we will do with a honey baked ham. Our Patreon will lead the way on that one.
Secondary thought.
Yeah.
String it up and hit it like a pinata.
Ew. No. I don't want that gelatin flying at me. Mm-mm. Nuh-uh. No. Mm-mm.
Mm. Ugh. You wouldn't... And then it would be flying away
like
from you.
The ham birth with all the goo out of the... Oh, No.
Yeah. Okay. Guess that's going to be an activity I will be doing alone.
Okay. Good luck with that one. On Luther's way across the street, he hears a haunting voice calling his name. He thinks he's hearing things, or possibly the spirit of Frosty the Snowman is haunting him. So he pushes on.
He gets to his neighbor's door and Walt answers and they make uncomfortable small talk. Walt explains, we were going to go over and say hello to Blair, but then, you know, it started snowing. Bev comes to the door and graciously takes the ham, even though Walt's allergic to pork and she's not much of a meat eater. Luther wishes them a half-hearted Merry Christmas and then makes his way back across the road before stopping in the middle of the street. He takes a moment to look at his house through his front window. He sees the party and family and friends having a wonderful time versus the house he just came from where the couple return to their solitary dinner, sitting alone at a large table. Luther looks as if he's contemplating something and turns back around. He again knocks on Walt's door and asks to come inside. He informs Bev and Walt, Blair's going to be staying with us for 10 days, so we aren't going to our trip. but Nora and I would like you to have it. It's all expenses paid in the Caribbean. It's a dream vacation. He tries to hand the couple the tickets, but they protest. Bev says, I don't think my doctor will clear me going on the trip like that. And Walt's got a deal that he's sure is going to come through any day now. And their son said he might stop by on Christmas. Luther looks at him skeptically and says, I didn't get the insurance, so if you don't take it, it'll just go to waste. I am offering you a vacation with no strings attached, and I see two very selfless people who are having a difficult time looking for an excuse. The older couple start protesting a little less and eventually accept the tickets. Luther assures them that he will transfer all the stuff into their name before they depart and says he better get back to his party. He gets a couple of steps out and Walt follows him, gives him a heartfelt thank you, and tells Luther, these tickets, they really mean a lot to me and Bev. Then he gets a twinkle in his eye and adds, and I hope this doesn't mean we have to start liking each other now. Luther assures him they don't, and Walt chuckles and says, good, because I never liked you, old man. Luther smiles and responds mischievously, and I'm not too fond of you either. And they part ways, but we all know that things will definitely be different between them now.
Aww. Luther hears the same voice again and finally figures out his neighbor, Ned, was left on the roof in the preparation frenzy. He gets a ladder to help him down just as the robber is in the master bedroom helping himself to the crank's valuables. Luckily, Spike has finally gotten wise to the fact that he let a convict loose in the house and finds the thief upstairs. He hollers for the police, which causes the robber to jump out a window and try to shimmy down the garage roof. Luther sees him and tells him, stop. But the robber doesn't listen. He jumps onto Luther's car and attempts to run away, but is stopped by a swift umbrella to the head, which knocks him out. And who is brandishing the umbrella? Why, it's Santa, or a man in a Santa suit. He looks at Luther meaningfully and says, I told you you could use an umbrella. Luther puts the pieces together and cries, Marty! Santa Artie nods and thanks Luther for the wonderful party, but it started snowing and he just can't resist this weather. It's great for business. Luther apologizes. Sorry you have to work on Christmas. Marty gets a twinkle in his eye and answers, Santa always works on Christmas. The officers haul the criminal away and Marty gets in his vintage VW bug and drives off. Luther stands there for a minute before he's joined by Nora, who leans her head on his shoulder and says, Bev called. That's really nice what you did. Maybe I was wrong about you after all. Yeah, Luther responds, skipping Christmas, what were we thinking? And Nora says softly, maybe next year, which causes Luther to do a double take and smile. The camera pans up into the sky where we see one of many rooftop frosty figurines waving and an eerily familiar VW bug pulled by reindeer chugging across the sky, showering glittery sparks behind him that form into the words, the end.
Ah, brink, brink, brink. Chinga, 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 chinga.
So, Miss Tamara, I can't wait for you to chinga, 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 chinga. Tell me why you j'adore this movie.
Oh my God, I guess I do like movies with terrible people in them. And I honestly did not think you were going to hate this movie as much as you did. But I love physical comedy, which this has.
And I hate physical comedy.
I know. I know. I've learned that from doing this podcast with you, oddly enough. I love redemption stories and I love a good like character arc. So Luther, who's awful throughout the whole movie, has that redeeming moment with Walt and Bev across the street,
which was very sweet.
And gives them the holiday. Yes, totally. First time I saw that, didn't see that coming. So that was like a nice little surprise at the end of this movie. But this is kind of one of those tried and true movies that I watched shortly after it was released. I don't think I saw it like right when it was released, but pretty, you know, soon after. And it became one of my holiday tradition movies.
Wow.
So every year would watch a myriad of holiday movies, the same ones, Elf, Christmas with the Cranks, Love Actually, A Christmas Story. There's quite a few, and I'm probably like forgetting a few, but yeah, this was in the roster. This was in the arsenal, and I've always just enjoyed it. and it's got memories of the holidays with me, and I like the cast a lot. Like Jamie Lee Curtis, Tim Allen plays a great asshole, and the fact that it's got Dan Aykroyd and a smattering of other people, that Cheech Marin, Jake Busey, like, it's got a star-studded cast. So
yes, it does.
I'm going to say, I'm going to give it a middle-of-the-road 3 dry kisses, because although I like it, I don't, it might not be for everybody, as Corinne has let me know boisterously.
Well, you know, it does have a whole 5% rotten on Rotten Tomatoes, so, you know.
Psh, cares? They don't know what they're talking about. They don't know what they're talking about. This may be a 5% Rotten Tomato movie, but somebody might like Rotten Tomatoes. Is it a good movie? Maybe not to everybody. Might you enjoy it? You might. Therefore, 3 dry kisses. Corinne, please regale me with your very high rating and what you think of this movie.
5 dry kisses. I think this should have had an Oscar. And I almost got a shower from Tamara.
Fuck right off for saying that when I was taking a drink of water.
I give this a whole 1 dry kiss. It was only going to get a half a dry kiss because I was going to generously give half a kiss to the stars that were in it who really needed a paycheck that month. But
I can't believe some of the Christmas movies that we've watched via Hallmark, and this one's going to get 1 dry kiss.
You know, okay. Here's the thing. It's about ratios. Mm-hmm. So it gets the other half of, okay, because I got to say, like, Dan Aykroyd loved his character, dressed impeccably throughout the movie. Fantastic. Loved his son. Was great as well. Like, those two were the highlight of the movie for me. And the thing about it is, as though, the amount of time we had with them was very small. And the amount of time we had with Luther was very big. And this movie is, I don't know, it was too long. This movie is 1 hour and 39 minutes. So this movie is 1 hour and 39 minutes. Reasonable length for a movie.
But it was so bad that it felt long to you, 1 hour and 39 minutes.
It was very one note for me. Because it was just Luther being horrible. Except for the final 10 minutes of the movie. So there were 10 minutes of just real sweetness.
I have to also add, I also loved how the community came together and rallied around the horrible neighbors. Also love a good neighborhood rally.
Yeah. Loved the neighborhood rally. Loved the last 10 minutes of the movie. Do I think Luther actually changed? Probably not. However, him offering the cruise tickets to his across the street neighbors was really sweet. And then there's this moment where he's standing in the middle of the street and he is looking at his neighbors who he just gave the cruise tickets to. And he's looking across the street at the party, and you see the whole neighborhood lit up with twinkle lights, and there's all the Frosties on the roofs, and it's just this really, like, peaceful, sweet Christmas moment. And it's just, like, that beautiful part of Christmas. And I was like, this is lovely. And it took forever to get here. I don't think there's actually been some kind of grand transformation on the other side either. But, like, only 10 minutes of this movie was this. So, and the rest of it was just, like, horrible. Luther being an asshole. And, like, strangely obsessed with cosmetic procedures did not make sense.
You know, the Luther character wasn't too far from his Tim the Toolman persona. I wonder if that's why he was cast for this role. Did you ever watch him in
Oh, yeah. I loved Home Improvement. He had...
Or Home Improvement, yeah.
He had more of a redemptive characteristics in Home Improvement than he did in this. And less plastic surgery. And his wife was more on it than the wife is in this as well, which...
Yeah, Nora's kind of like, honey, can we do that?
Yeah.
Honey, can we give this away? Honey, is it okay if we blah, blah, blah?
Exactly. I'm like, why are you asking him about putting Frosty on the roof? Just put fucking Frosty on the roof and deal with the fallout. But yeah, her character was sweet, but a nothing burger. And I just felt bad for her because she was married to fucking Luther. I was like, run.
Until
run
the
while
end.
You can.
Well, she was like, fuck right off. We're doing this. I don't care. I'm doing it with or without. No, you know what? I'm doing this with you because I put up with your bullshit and I put up with all your fuckery. And now you're going to get on board with me and my Christmas vest and we're going to make this shit happen.
Yes. I would say that she had more of a character arc than he did. Like, I feel like there was more kind of a growth to her character as opposed to him suddenly just being like, I'm going to give you ham that you're allergic to and then I'll give you cruise tickets. Like
cruise tickets and ham, the gift that keeps on giving.
Yes. So one entire dry kiss. It got elevated from a half a dry kiss to a whole dry kiss. Mm. So...
And I'm going to give it three dry kisses with a side of giant spam, honey-baked spam masubi.
A casserole pan of honey. I'll take that. I will jump on board the casserole pan of honey-baked spam masubi.
Mm-hmm. Might not be for everyone, or it might be your most favorite thing in the world. You don't know until you try it.
You never know until you try it. And I definitely think calling tinned ham honey-baked spam is the way to go. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I was very glad, though, that this had that kind of magical Christmas moment in the end. And I liked the quirkiness of the Santa. That was odd, and I was here for it.
It all came back around to Marty the liquor store stranger.
Yes. So, Miss Tamara, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we're doing Inventing the Christmas Prince. It's a Hallmark movie, and it stars Tamara Housley. Guess who picked it?
Da-da, da-da-da-da-da, the reigning Hallmark queen, that's me.
Corinne. Who's making jazz hands at herself.
Oh, I'm so excited for this one. And Tamara is either going to really like it or she's going to really hate it. We'll find out.
It's a toss-up. It's 50-50 which direction it goes.
It's actually a pretty good one. So it's just, you know, depends on whether the tropes will delight her or cause her to scoff in scorn.
Will I be seeking Christmas with the Cranks revenge?
Yes.
Nah. I've come to realize that Corinne and I have very different tastes in movies. So, and that's okay.
Yeah. Well, we have some nice overlap.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
We definitely do. But we'll be watching something and being like, you like this? We're watching this on purpose because of you. Okay. I'm game.
Oh, I am so game. So excited about this one. If you have anything that you would like to say about Christmas with the Cranks, Inventing the Christmas Prince, Tim Allen, or anything else, you can reach out to us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or reach out to us via Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us, we really appreciate that. And we'd like to thank everyone that has rated and reviewed us up until this point. We have tripled our ratings, so we greatly appreciate and thank everyone that took the time to do that for us. But in the meantime, we thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! See you next time.
See you next time. What the hell, Luther?
Whatever, Luther.
Whatever, Luther.
Oh, Luther.
Fuck off, Luther.
Damn it, Luther. Luther, you bastard. No, that doesn't sound right.
No.
Well, I mean, it sounds right.
But it sounds right, bud.
I've got a bunch of catchphrases for that fucker now.